And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 45 of The Roundtable, the only podcast that can be personally responsible for the Rays losing three games. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Gentlemen, how you doing? Let's start with Andy.
Strength of schedule.
Yeah. We were kind of on that.
I like the Rays. No. I think they're good. They're going to make the playoffs. But, now that they've played like a team that, you know, isn't terrible.
Mark, how you doing?
I mean, the Rays have got one loss in America, so I think they're right on track.
What's the exchange rate there?
Right. So, like, really, what were the, I mean, good Lord, what do we got, like, 1.5 losses, really, for them?
Yeah, I like that. That's sabermetrics. That is sabermetrics.
That's some next level stuff right there.
Yeah, but that loss was to the Reds. That counts for two. I mean, what are we doing?
That's a fair point.
Playing the Reds in April. Manfred!
The unbalanced schedule, I thought I wouldn't notice, but I notice. It's weird. It's a little, or is it balanced schedule now, right? That's the way it is.
The balanced schedule, yeah.
It's a balanced schedule. It definitely is. You're like, that's a weird matchup. And, you know, I'm not one of, like, I grew up with Interleague, so it's never been, like, that strange to see the Yankees play the Braves or something. But there are some where you're like, oh, wow, it's kind of odd for this time of year.
Yeah, I think Reds-Rays is like at the top of, that is a
you
peanut butter and pork
think
chops.
About those two teams. Yeah.
Well, that Mariner-Cub matchup is just dripping with history.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, some of those are a little, but actually, I love the weird matchups. Don't get me wrong. Like, I like the balanced schedule. I am in favor of the balanced schedule. There's only so many times you can see Giants-Rockies in a season. Take that from me. So we are going to take a little spin around the NL West because we were pitching ideas to each other about this episode, and we just kept bringing up NL West teams. We'll go to other places in the world after that, but I don't know. NL West, Diamondbacks fever, Valley fever, catch it?
Don't catch Valley fever. It's very bad for you, which I learned. I thought it was like a joke when I saw that Ike Davis had it. I was like, you know. I was covering the Mets, and there was a story Marty Noble had that he had Valley fever. And I was like, what does that mean? He had like a tough time hitting this winter? And no, it was like a real illness. It was very serious. Yeah, the D-backs are very interesting, right? They're frisky. That's a good word for them, right? They're frisky. They're young. They're willing to mix it up. They've got a lot of intriguing young players. Corbin Carroll obviously comes to mind. Very fast young man. They've got some interesting arms. Their brand has always been competence. Right? They're a team that catches the baseball. They're a team that goes first to third. They're a team that doesn't beat itself, right? That's when in their sort of in the Torrey Lovello, Mike Hazen era, that's kind of been who they are. They're getting back to that a little bit. And I think they're capitalizing. And look, it's whatever, 17 games. But like you're seeing kind of a more tightly packed NL West because the Dodgers look weaker than they've been in quite some time. And the Dads can't get out of their own way, which is, you know, if you were drawing up like what this season might look like, right? Like, this is a non-shocking outcome.
Yeah. I mean, I had to, before the season, I wrote one of those intensely researched pieces, 10 predictions for the Giants. And one of them had to do with Diamondbacks coming. Diamondbacks are coming. And what stands out to me is when you look, they're 10-7 as of this recording. They are doing okay. They're doing fine. They're not like blowing the doors off the league. But what stands out to me is how much is not going right for them, where you've got Christian Walker not hitting. Ketel Marte is doing okay. You know, you've got a lot of different players, Alec Thomas, Jake McCarthy, their young outfield, a lot of them are not hitting. And that's a big deal because the issue is supposed to be pitching. Can they pitch? And Zach Gallen's looking great. Merrill Kelly's looking great. I'm gonna say a name for the first time. They've got Brandon Pfat in the wings. You know him, Brandon Pfat. He's like he's like one of the best prospects in baseball. I should probably
We're gonna look this up and get to the bottom of this gentleman.
Are you okay?
Brendan.
Are you choking?
Oh wow. This is a tough one.
No, I'm not. Baseball Reference, help me out. Pronunciation. Wow. Fought. No, I'm not gonna get that.
Okay.
Brandon Fought. I'm not gonna get that in the first time.
Sorry, man. You're gonna be Brandon. That kid was called Brandon Fat his entire life.
Yeah.
And he grew up to be like a star baseball player, and they were still like, yeah, you're still Brandon Fat, buddy.
It's probably what drove him. That competitive drive is kicking the shit out of people that called him Brandon Fat.
There's kids from his high school in Louisville be like, yeah, I remember Brandon Fat.
Old fatty fat. No, but they got fought in the wings, and so they can throw a rotation at you. Whenever a team like this is surprising, I love to look at what's not going right for them. And to me, it feels like there is more ceiling for the D-backs.
Yeah, I mean, like you look at their offense right now, nobody's hitting. And it's just not going to stay that way. And, you know, maybe I'm just one of these. See, I bought into the Jake McCarthy fantasy hype. Oh, this guy's going to steal a bunch of bags and all this crap. You know, he hasn't gotten on base enough to do that. And he's already been caught once. So I'm just going to use him as the avatar for the entire club. There's no way this guy is on basing 264 the rest of the year. And he's actually, you know, and seriously, he is sort of one of those guys that we've talked about them in these terms, like they're dynamic, they're young, they got legs, they're going to be a pain in your ass. Jake McCarthy's that guy if, you know, he's getting on base and doing what he's supposed to do. So, you know, another one to look out for, Ketel Marte. I just don't think he's going to stay down this long. You know, and he's hit a couple homers and he's had his moments, but like, you know, you figure it's in there, right? Somebody like that will rediscover what we saw a couple of years ago with him. So, yeah, like I'm still all the way on board with our Diamondbacks fever from our season preview.
I think that this probably says something about Grant's personality versus my personality, right? Like I look at all the guys who aren't hitting and I look at the Pythag and then I think that it's 17 games and I'm like, yeah, they're still going to win 77.
Fair enough.
But like you can see where if they're going to level. I think it's just, I am curious to see for how long they stay above water while the Padres and the Dodgers are trying to figure stuff out. Because, you know, if you bet on the talent, both those clubs will do so. But there's definitely some troubling signs there.
Let's get into that. So let's go Dads. It seems like you are on the Padres scene as far as you're scoping them out. And you're saying, yeah, if it doesn't work, it's going to not work out like something like this. They're, you know, Juan Soto.
What in the world?
The next Ted Williams or the next Mark Reynolds, right? Like, you know, what's with the average? You know, I know it's 2023. We're not supposed to look at batting average, but my word.
I was talking to a baseball guy's opinion I trust, and he said it was interesting when he watches Soto that he finds him like almost passive at the plate, almost like sometime he comes up looking to walk, which like, I don't know. I don't think that's actually what's going on, but there definitely, if you watch his at-bats, there are, you know, pitches where you're like, oh, that ball probably could have been in the seats, right? If like it was properly timed up, or like, oh, that's interesting that he took there, you know, the count's 2-1 now, right? And he just seems very clearly like out of sorts. He's rolling over a lot of stuff, you know, he's trying to kind of pull everything, isn't really, you know, staying back on the baseball, all that kind of stuff. It turns out it's possible that turning down $500 million can be kind of challenging for you. I don't know. But it is interesting, like, right, like there was sort of this idea, even last year, right, when he was getting traded, there had been all this sort of talk about Soto for so long as the next Ted Williams, as this batting champ and all this stuff. And, you know, you talk to people in the sport who are like, look, he's awesome, clearly. But also, like, he's got an 850 OPS. He's not much of a fielder. And, you know, there are some concerns. And it's been a bit of time since he really was, you know, a top 10 hitter in the sport in terms of output, right?
I mean, you're talking, you go back to 2021, the first 4 years in his league, he's 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. He has a 981 OPS in those 4 years. That's bananas. So if, like, if you're scoffing now at the next Ted Williams stuff, remember what he was when he was 19. You know, he was just so advanced. And since then, you know, not as much. But again, it's we're talking a season and change since then. I don't know what's going on necessarily with him, but it's fascinating because it's a tricky spot for the Padres because they love to lock them players up. Like, they love to just, you know, throw $500 million at these guys and keep them in tow for a long time. You got to see a little bit more from Soto. Again, 18 games, you know, what are you going to do?
I think you do hit, though, at the one thing where it kind of counts a little bit, right? It kind of matters a little bit, right? Like, when you're trying to potentially lock somebody up to a long-term deal, boy, it would sure be a bit easier if he'd, like, looked like he did a couple years ago, right about now. You know, it just makes everything easier on that front. Now, this is the thing, and you guys have referenced this already. We talk about age a lot, obviously. It's important in the sport. He's 24. Right. So, like, if you have a person to bet on where it's like, you know what, there's plenty of time for this to course correct. Well, he's the guy. Right. Like, and I think that's worth noting, too, is that, my goodness, how much has this guy already accomplished? And he's not 25 yet. Meanwhile, you got, you know, all the prospect hype machine goes crazy. Someone gets promoted. They're 25 years old. They haven't done anything yet. They haven't done a damn thing. This guy's got a World Series ring. This guy's already drawn those comps. He's had massive seasons. He has been a top 10 hitter in the sport. Man, somebody that talented and that young, it's just never that far off, right? So, yeah, it's that. I think that's the thing I look at. It's like, yeah, grant you the fact that, like, it's been a bit, right? It's been a minute, but, like, he's still, to me, a relatively safe bet to figure it out. He will be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I mean, you know, you hear the hype on, like, sort of older players. I swear, I was just listening to some dumbass talk about 25-year-old Jake McCarthy. I'm trying to remember.
Almost got him. Almost got the spit take.
Almost. Very close.
I didn't call him a top 10 hitter in the league. All right? Freaking troll. I ripped myself for buying into the fantasy hype. Yeah. Oh, this guy's going to steal a bunch of bags, man. He's so undervalued. You got to get him. Like,
he's apparently a very nice young man.
He's a one, according to Nick Porcaro.
Yeah, friend of the pod. I get that the Padres have made it a habit of signing all these guys. You also don't have to do that. I mean, I know that, man, please, I hope everyone who's listening covers their ears while I say this because it's so anti-labor. But, like, you can just ride it out.
You getting shades of Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard and Chase Utley clanking around?
Or just, most likely Fernando Tatis will be a bargain for the Padres over the course of his contract, right? Like, most likely, we'll talk about Tatis in a minute, right? He'll come back and he'll probably be a pretty good player. He's always been a pretty good player when he's healthy. But he also hasn't really been much of a player for the Padres since they signed him to that contract. Now, like, the deal will probably work out. Right. But there was big risk in there. And if he continues on the path that he's been on, where he's suspended and hurt, that they might regret that sort of deal. So there is value in just kind of playing things out and gathering more information and seeing if Soto gets out of this. I don't think there's anything, like, untoward or, you know, in doing that. But I don't know. I've never owned a baseball team.
Well, not with that kind of attitude you have. But So let's move on to Tatis, because I guess the subject is preternaturally talented young players with a string of 900 plus OPSs. Tatis is juiced to return as the Chiron. Tatis is, he kind of follows, at least in production, Soto's path, where just a monster until the end of 2021, and then a little bit of a mystery. Mystery for different reasons. They took away his can of spinach, ostensibly, so you're hoping that he'll be the same player, I think, probably. You know, he'll be, what is he, 24 now? And if healthy, a monster. If healthy. You know, what do you know about Tatis? No one knows about Tatis as far as the health.
It's not a question of if he's currently healthy, right? Like, he made it through spring training. He's been raking in the minors. He looks good, you know, saying all the right things. You know, the bases may, you know, his game might be even more dynamic, right, if he's running more. But the issue is just he has tended to get hurt, right? He's had the back stuff. There was the motorcycle accident. You know, he's had the lingering shoulder thing. You know, he's coming back from the shoulder surgery. I think there was a wrist in there too, possibly. There's just been a lot of stuff. So it's not like, I don't view it as a, like, if you think about like Giancarlo Stanton, right? He just went on the IL with a soft tissue lower body. It's like, yeah, that is just kind of what happens with Stanton at this point, unfortunately. Tatis, you can't exactly pinpoint it, but he's just kind of been under a cloud, you know, in some ways. And so it'll be curious to see if he can stay out of that, if he can stay healthy. He's never done it in the majors.
There's also just the time missed component, right? Like, that's a long time to be just away from facing major league competition. You figure that just on time alone, even with his incredible ability, and you know, I'm with Andy. I'm convinced he's healthy, right? Like, he's looked good in the minors, but still, that's just a long time to catch up, right? Like, those are reps that are gone. Those are at bats that are gone. Those are opportunities to get better. And he's certainly still in a phase of his career, this is crazy, where he can get better, right? And it hasn't happened because he hasn't posted. He hasn't played. I think for a bit here, you know, it would probably be wise, if you're a Padres fan, to build in a little bit of breaking in period here, because it's a long time to go without seeing high-level pitching. You know, and I think that's what I'm kind of fascinated by, is how quickly can he actually acclimate himself, because I think that is a bigger challenge. It's a big challenge, one that maybe we don't think about because he's got so much ability. I just think it's going to be a while until he gets his feet on the ground, you know, gets up to speed. It could take kind of this adjustment period.
I would expect him to be ultra aggressive, you know, just he's been waiting, man. He has been waiting. I expect him to be swinging out of his shoes. Maybe it'll work. You know, the ultra patient Giants fan base, the first week of the season, Michael Conforto wasn't looking good. And it was like, that guy's a bum, man. And it's like, man, this guy has not seen live pitching, you know, other than spring training for a year. And he had a shoulder injury the last time he did see live pitching. So it's going to, I like that idea. I like that take. There's going to be an adjustment period. And I'm expecting to be aggressive and just, you know, because he likes to play baseball. He has a certain elan, a certain joie de vivre. And he gets out there and he wants to play. So it'll be fun, but I don't know how much immediate impact he might have.
You could pronounce those words, but not fought.
Dude, that. I'm telling you, old fatty.
Grant, what is wrong with the Giants? I'm looking at their baseball reference page. Bart's hitting, Flores is hitting, Estrada's been good, JD Davis is hitting, Conforto's fine. The pitching, starting pitching seems okay. And then they're 5-10?
Yeah, it is. So look, they've have an adjusted OPS of 102. They have an adjusted ERA of 102. Those are above average. In order to be 5-10, everything has to go wrong at the worst time. Seriously.
Like yesterday. They had a game like that yesterday, did they not? I mean,
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
They just the Marlins. That
they're cruising. Logan
W.
Webb's going.
Yeah.
Logan Webb is pitching his nose
his
off.
Off. Yep.
Yeah, and just the last second, two outs. I don't know if there are two strikes, but like he's almost out of the inning, and then boom, 2-run homer to Jesus Aguilar, and it is just one of those things. But here's the thing: no one wants to read that. No one wants to read the words of me going, yeah, it's just one of those things. Here's a lot of encouraging things, you know, and start listing. And that's actually the article I'm working on. It's like one nice thing to say about every player on the roster.
Didn't Logan Webb yesterday throws a couple like really good changeups that the Marlins put in play and ends up scoring runs, right? Like on good pitches. Like, I mean, his slider looked really good yesterday. I was watching some of that game and like, I'm like, oh, hey, there he is, right? There he is. Cause like, you know, he's had kind of a weird start to the year. Now he's got a kind of an iffy lineup and he's carving him up. And then, you know, and then I stepped away from the game. Okay, like I went something, I got distracted, you know, like I think like Robbie, like had a diaper change or whatever. And I, you know, kind of lost track of it. I picked my phone up later on. I'm like, they lost the game. What the hell? How did that happen? They lost the game? Like,
that's
what?
How it's gone over the weekend of the Tigers. Exactly. The two games against the Tigers where you like look up and go, wow, what the heck? there are problems, legitimate problems, like Ross Stripling. He's got gopheritis right now, and it's not great. Taylor Rogers is lost, broken, whatever you want to say. He can't throw strikes. He's got a little bit of blast going on, but then he gets – it's like a combination of blasts and then meatballs down the middle, you know, because he's trying to overcorrect. And so he looks messed up. So I'm not going to say everything's rosy in Giants land, but they've got some stuff that's working for them. They're better than a 5-10 team. I know that's damning with faint praise, but I'm not that worried about them as far as like not approaching 81 wins. But if you're trying to do more than that, a 5-10 start kind of stinks and goes against that. So not optimal timing.
But no, there are things going well. You mentioned J.D. Davis. He is hitting. He's also fielding the ball.
Yes.
He's playing really good defense at third base. He had, when I was watching the game yesterday, I saw him go to his left, backhand a ball, make a nice throw across the dime. Like, I was just like, wow, okay. Like, this is somebody who looks anyway to me. Like, he's put some work in there and it's paying off. So, like, yeah, let's not confuse them with, like, let's say the team across the bay where nothing is going right.
we'll get there. We'll get there.
Oh, we'll get there.
And just go. Yeah. Just let it rip.
Producer Brian wants to mention, and he's right, Giants have some injuries, and specifically two part of their plan, Austin Slater and Mitch Haniger being hurt. That's the part of the roster that's supposed to punish left-handers like a ton. So you've got those two guys missing where you're having to put Yastrzemski in against left-handers. Maybe Lamont Wade Jr. is facing left-handers, which he simply doesn't do. I don't know. I'm not making excuses. I think that they're, you know, kind of okay. But Andy surprises me. He's a little bit down on the Dodgers. And I just watched the Dodgers thump the Giants. But talk about your Dodger blues.
They have not found purchase yet, as they say. And it is very early.
Who says that?
Yeah, who says that?
I've never said that in my life.
Never heard that in my life.
Herman Melville? Does Herman Melville say like these? They found the purchase.
Hold on. I'm going to look it up. Yeah.
Is that a quote from Billy Budd?
What does find purchase mean? To meet with or discover by chance. So maybe. Yeah, I mean, so that wasn't really what I was trying to convey.
It sounded good, man. He said it convincingly.
He sold
me. Yeah.
Yeah, one day I'm going to find purchase a brain. I'll tell you what, man. one of these days I'm going to... You ever just like wake up and be like, well, maybe my brain will function today. And it's like, nah, got to go watch these poker live streams.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator, one more great product from LinkedIn. You're there to network, you're there to look for jobs, you're there to post jobs, And how about LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/baseballshow. That is linkedin.com/baseballshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/baseballshow and get started. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
If I wake up and go, boy, I sure can't think today. You know what day it is? It's Tuesday. It's podcast day. Yeah, I'm just going to go on there and chew my own tongue. All right. Go on about Dodgers.
I do want to point out that while the bad Rodgers has an 18, the good Rodgers has a 0 and combined 5.56. So look at it that way. Yeah, the Dodgers, like, it doesn't really change how I feel about them. Long term, I think they're going to win the division. They have a good amount of pitching, but you know the offense is just shorter. It's just shorter than it's been in previous years, and even the pitching, you know, the bullpen is like a mess, which is not something you're accustomed to. I wrote about this like a little bit the other, like a week or so ago, just kind of going through some of the early bullpen hiccups. They kind of like brought back the same group that they did last year when they had, you know, like one of the two or three best bullpens in the sport, which like makes total sense. But we also know with bullpens that it's just incredibly volatile, right? And you just have to churn. Like this idea that you're going to have the same, your top five guys are going to be the same every year. Even your top three guys are going to be the same every year is kind of, you know, like foolish. And it's not that the Dodgers assumed that, but it's more like players under team control, like, no, you know, let's just roll it and see what happens. And right now they're going through this phase where just guys are not performing at the level that they've been accustomed to. And so I think when you're assessing the Dodgers coming into this season, I don't know if much ink was spilled on the bullpen because one, it had been really good. Two, it's pretty much the same. And no, who knows, right? Like you could say like, oh, this is going to be a good bullpen. It's like, maybe. You could say, oh, I actually think it's going to be bad. Maybe. It's a bullpen, right? It's more like you're betting on the organization to figure it out. I assume that they kind of will figure it out, but they haven't yet. And it's cost them some games.
Every time when I'm doing like a team preview or a season preview, it's like, you know, rotation expectations and lineup expectations, and it gets to bullpen and I would punt. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, you're asking me to know? They're going to call up some dude in AA right now or some minor league contract who's 28 years old and say, wow, he's the talk of Twitter. He throws a 98 mile per hour sinker with a million spin rate, and they'll figure it out. And the Dodgers probably will figure it out going forward. Like they're trying to do it with Shelby Miller, right? Shelby Miller, I saw him pitch with the Giants last year, and he looked good. Like the stuff was there. You're like, I remember Shelby Miller. Yeah. And the Dodgers saw that too, and I think he'll figure it out, but there's like no guarantee. You don't just, even if you're the Dodgers, like maybe Shelby Miller is just kind of, you know, a 32-year-old guy coming back from serious injuries who will never be the same again. So I don't know.
Sure.
They'll probably figure it out. But as of right now, yeah, concern.
Well, you know, Andy listed a couple of things there. The first one being the bullpen. I tend to agree. That's one thing where you give them some benefit of the doubt because they're the Dodgers, and that's kind of an area that a lot of teams have to figure out as the year goes along. I think the harder thing is how do you lengthen that lineup? That's the one. Like, okay, what's the fix there? Because, you know, can you see them digging up some arm, making move, whatever? Sure, you can see that. I think you can see that with lots of teams. Lineup length, I don't know, man. Like, that just seems like a trickier problem to solve, and they're probably going to have to solve it because, you know, the Padres aren't going to get in their way the entire season, I don't think, right? I just don't think that's going to happen. So that I'm curious about. That I want to see how that shakes out.
I will say with lineup length, I'm impressed just all the way by James Outman. Like he just seems like he can play and he can hit and he can field. And he's like one of those guys that just shows up for a team like the Dodgers. And then you have to get used to him for a few years. Miguel Vargas, I think, is like an outstanding young player. So they're working on getting that length back. And I think it was a very concerted effort to, you know, shift from the Justin Turner aged guys in the lineup. You know, they got JD Martinez in there to be the veteran, but I think that they're getting that length back, but they're going to be adjustments, and there's certainly no guarantees, which is what they've had for like 10 years running, guarantees.
Yeah, they just have more dead spots in the lineup than they used to, especially with Will Smith on the concussion IL. Like, Austin Barnes is obviously a very excellent defensive catcher, but he's just not hitting. You know, David Peralta looks cooked. You know, Chris Taylor has just really struggled to make contact over the past few years, and it doesn't appear to be, you know, proven. I think he's hitting like 125, like tons of whiffs. And that just becomes more pronounced, right, when you go from a lineup that has like seven guys to a lineup with maybe like four. And then when Smith goes down, it's like three, you know. And so if, you know, Freddie Freeman has an off night, right? If Mookie Betts is, you know, like less, you know, is, you know, Mookie Betts is his thing has always been, right, that he's five tools. He's not a 1,000 OPS guy. He's one of the best players in the sport because he does everything well, right? So when he's like 840 OPSing, right, like that is more pronounced when you have dead spots in the 7-8-9 role and when, you know, the bullpen is not holding on for a lot of 3-1 victories. Their bet on their team was they would find enough version. Like, they thought Vargas would hit. He's been fine, a little bit below average, but he'll probably be fine. They really liked James Outman, as we've said. And they just thought they were just going to have so much pitching, right? And there's still some coming in the minors, but, like, the bullpen's just not there yet, and it's cost them a bunch.
All right, well, that brings us to the Rockies. Anyways, Mark, you had something you wanted to say on the A's, right? You wanted to cook on the A's.
I don't know if I want to cook on the A's.
To cook the A's.
I was, yeah, oh my God. Now, just watching the team over the weekend because the Mets were in town. Guys, I can't remember seeing a worse team in my adult life. Like, and I can't remember it because it's one thing to have a bad baseball team because there are competitive cycles. Like, you're going to be good some years, not good the others. And sometimes it's part of a plan. I'm watching this team and they're like totally non-competitive. All right. Like, the pitching is non-competitive. Like, there's nothing to break down here. They suck. All right. They can't even throw strikes. Jesus. They're afraid to throw strikes, whatever it is. And it's like, let me be clear. I'm not ripping the players. I think those guys are out there trying as hard as they can. Like, they are. Like, there's no like, but they've been assembled to be horrific. And that's what they've gotten. And it's horrible to watch. All right. Like, it's terrible to watch it because you just don't even, what's the end game to all of this? Like, yes, they want to move, whatever. I keep hearing this is Major League. Major League was fun. All right. It was a fun movie and there are people you wanted to root for. It was interesting. This isn't fun. This isn't interesting. All right. It's non-competitive, terrible baseball. They're going to lose 120 games potentially. That sounds crazy, but that is how bad they are right now. Like, I mean, and to me, like, this isn't some weird small short season or small sample. What? No, they're not good. They're really bad, as a matter of fact. And you know, I was in my mind just like, who's even in the conversation? Like, what the proto or the pre, you know, tanking Astros, like even before they broke it all down, because they were horrific then, right? When they had literally a 0.0 TV rating at home, right? Like the Tigers, Alan Trammell, that group, like, right? Was it, I think he was managing the club then. Like, they were horrific. Like, the Oakland A's right now might be worse. And those are the only other two teams that came to mind as far as who's even in the conversation for worst teams I've seen since I've been watching baseball.
I'm not going to cook. Yeah, you just cook, man. You just cook, baby. No, listen, Ken Waldichuk is one of five Oakland starters who has made at least three starts. He has a 10.20 ERA. That's third best on the team.
Unbelievable.
There are three starting pitchers with an ERA over 10. They aren't striking batters out. They are walking a lot of batters. That's a really rough combination, especially in the modern game where, like, anyone can strike batters out. You're supposed to be able to find just arms in AAA. Maybe they'll never throw strikes, or maybe they'll give up all the home runs in the world, but they'll at least strike these hungry hitters out, and the A's aren't doing that. I misspoke earlier when I said that Jesus Aguilar, by the way, hit that home run Soler. Against Logan Webb. It was Jorge Soler. I see that because now I'm looking at the A's roster.
Plays for the Oakland A's.
And woof, woof. You know what I mean?
Yes, woof is right.
You know, it's interesting you referenced the Astros, right? So the Lunau Astros, right, cut to the bone. Like, just he inherits, right, a bit of a wreck of a team, right? We, you know, we all know Evan Drellick. We've read the book, whatever. We know the story. But they cut to the bone everything. Right. And it's the idea of getting efficient, getting this, getting that, you know, bringing in these processes, and they're going to tank and get these top picks. Right. I wonder if, like, with the A's, it's harder to see the end game, if only because they were already at the bone. Right. They were already, like, not spending. They were already, they didn't have crowds. They already, the baseball operations department, to their credit, right, had built this kind of preposterous machine that could kind of churn out, like, you know, 88 to 95 win teams for almost, you know, 20 years, right? Maybe even a little bit longer than that. But doing it like on a shoestring, right? And it's kind of like, okay, so you're still on a shoestring, even maybe just one singular shoestring, not shoestrings. But like, okay, you moved to Vegas and then what? Like, are you going to be like the A's again? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to be like the Moneyball A's, where, like, you're doing roster churn and all the stuff that was basically working until you stopped making it. Like, what? It's just kind of hard to, I don't know. And what I'm saying is making sense. Like, I understand why they have done this, like, hard tank. I obviously don't, like, think it's a great idea. But it just seems like less like, oh, this is the obvious thing we had to do, in the way that, like, the Cubs or the Astros, it made more sense.
The sport really is divided into two buckets. There are the organizations, whether you agree with the plan or not, they have one, right? Like, they're operating with, like, you know, the base level capacity as far as, like, your front office analytics, scouting, all that, right? Like, and you might have a different opinion on what a competitive window is or when it's going to come or whatever, but, like, they are operating kind of within those parameters. Then there's the other bucket where it's just like they're throwing darts at a board, like the Colorado Rockies, right? You're just like, what are they doing, right? The Oakland A's have gone from one bucket to the other. They make no sense.
By choice.
So it's offensive. It's horrific. I feel bad for those players. I feel bad for those coaches. I feel bad for the fans that pretty much every night is just pissing all over what was, despite all their limitations, a franchise that was making it or trying to make it work, at least on the field. All right. Now, historically, this is sort of what they've been. All right. Like, I think the Athletics as an entity for the entirety of the American League is fascinating, because if you've been watching them, this is nothing new. 1979, they had a game, I think, where they had like 300 people in the stands. Charlie Finley was trying to move the club or sell the club. And when you talk about cutting to bare bones, the Houston Astros have nothing on Charlie Finley. Because, like, it got to the point where there wasn't even anyone answering the phones at the ballpark. All right. Like, I mean, these are all, it's well documented. It's all true. The Athletics have always had this boom and bust. I think what has been interesting about them over the last 20 some years, as Andy mentioned, is that despite that, they found a way to make it work until they chose not to. And like, it really, it's brutal. You know, the fans of the East Bay are going to get scapegoated for this, and it's total bullshit. This is an owner deciding that enough is enough. I'm not going to try anymore. And I think the infuriating thing is like, you don't even know what the end game is. Because yes, okay, you moved to Las Vegas, and then what? More of this? More of this crap?
No, I think the game plan is at that point, you sell to Sheldon Adelson. Like, I just Googled, does Sheldon Adelson like baseball?
Positive he's passed away.
If not, I'm sure he's got kids, you know, or heirs or something or other. Like, I think the game, what I'm saying is that the end game is that you sell the team if you're John Fisher. You are trying to build up this value, get the hot new shiny ticket in the city that is an abomination of nature and shouldn't exist by all, you know, good measures. But, man.
Selling the team to a dead man would make more sense than what they're doing.
There's just this stupid narrative that goes around that like the region can't support the club, and I think it's nonsense, because if you look at the one time in the history of the Oakland Athletics where they did it the right way, spent money on players, reached out to fans, had good like broadcast contracts in place, like made the stadium experience really good, they drew and they won a lot. Candlestick Park was a fucking toilet. All right. It was a toilet with mediocre to bad baseball. And across the bay, the A's fielded teams full of stars and people came. All right. And it was a nice ballpark to be in. That to me is the thing that drives me crazy about this, is that they've set it up so you can like continue to repeat this stupid, tired narrative about the fans don't support the club. And it's nonsense. It's nonsense. It's always been nonsense. They have an AM station. So producer Brian says they don't have a local estate.
Carrig's yelling at everyone. Yeah. All right. He said, like, he wasn't going
to
cut.
They were supposed to cut it off like 3 years ago during the pandemic. And like, I think they're back on what, KNEW or something like that. Am I wrong? Like, you know, here's obviously I don't know because I'm on the East Coast now, but I've heard him on the radio.
All 4 watts.
Grant, here's a question. If there was a possum living in the walls of your house, how long would you let it live there?
This is a funny question because there is a rat somewhere living in my walls right now.
Okay, I picked my what's that attorney's thing? Never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Yeah, you know, and I got some strategies. I got some strategies, but I haven't necessarily sealed the deal. So I don't know, man. The possums kind of, you know, possums can be cute in their own weird, ugly way. I say it's just a bobblehead day, right? That'll get the fans back.
There is kind of a Last of Us quality to Oakland Coliseum, right? Like, it's overrun by feral cats, the visitors broadcast booth, the SNY just showed up, and the possum had taken a dump in the middle of it.
Yep.
Yeah, Gary Cohen called it the possum leavings.
Leavings, yeah so good.
Leavings of the possum. The, you know, there's just seagulls overrunning, which, you know, that happens in San Francisco as well because of their proximity to the bay. But, like, I was watching, they were playing the Mets, and, like, the upper, you know, Mount Davis was just, like, overrun with seagulls in the middle of the day. Like, there is a, you know, nature is healing aspect to the land reclaiming Oakland Coliseum.
It is 100% true, and then that's to Mark's point, when I was growing up, man, Oakland was the place you felt really jealous of. That, as a Giants fan growing up, I went to, you know, 30 games at Candlestick Park every year, and I'd go to 2 in Oakland, and you'd go there and just be like, ain't this pretty? Look at this. There's, you know, it's temperate. It's, you take BART right there, you walk in, it's just like a good time out. The team's got stars, the stands are full, like, they have it all. And I just like it, the vision. Imagine if the A's were the Rays. I mean, you know, had that kind of pitching, you know, conveyor belt going. If they had, if they were trying.
They were. Right. The Rays became the A's.
They were.
The A's became.
The Rays took what the A's are doing. I mean, the A's were the Rays.
No, but seriously, to that point, when the A's were the Moneyball A's, it was a fun time out. It was a fun time out.
They were the Moneyball A's, like, 2.5 years ago.
Just kept making the playoffs. But that's what they did.
They won the division in 2020. You know? They won like 97 games in 18 and 19. Like, they had a very good team. Now, like, they happened to, you know, from geographic bad luck, they played with the Astros, right? So, you know, they were sort of overshadowed. But, like, from, I think it was, you know, 7 or 18 through 20, that was a very good club. And they were coming off a run in the earlier part of the decade where they were very good as well. Like, they were that. They just stopped being it. As Mark said, they went from a team that, if you agree with it or not, they had a way of doing things that worked to this new strat. Like, the end game is just so much harder to visualize.
It's almost giving them too much credit to call it a strategy. I don't know what this is. Like, I just, you know, like I said, look, baseball's hard, right? It's very hard to play at a high level. I'm not trying to poke fun at the dudes on the field that are trying to win games. I know they're trying to win games, like, but, you know, those folks have been put in this horrific position. It's been done on purpose, and I think it's a shame. Like, it's a real shame. We just shouldn't have clubs being, like, operating this way. I'm sorry. You just can't have it.
And what I would say is that I have my finger on the pulse of my own community, is that this area is freaking hungry for a team to root for. Warriors moved to San Francisco. The Raiders are gone to Vegas. You could do what the Padres did. The Padres were a joke a couple years ago, but all of a sudden they don't have any other sports teams, the Big Four. And then the Padres see that opening and say, we're going to be the sports team. We're going to get people goofy for this team. And they did it. The Petco Park is goofy for the Padres. I'm not saying that the A's could have, with the current ballpark, been drawing 40,000 a night, but they really could have laid some groundwork because it's a rich area that wants to be goofy for a team. How do you screw that up?
It's amazing. And they've been in Oakland, by the way, as long as they've been in Philadelphia as a franchise. Like, I mean, so this is not a thing where, like, they should be looked at as transient. They've been there, and they've been there for a really long time. They are part of the region. They are part of the area. Yeah, the Giants have a bigger fan base. They always will. But that doesn't mean the A's don't have one, too. You know, despite the fact that it seems like folks that have owned that club for the majority of the 50-plus years they've been in Oakland have tried to drive fans away. All right. I mean, Charlie Finley, like, actively tried to drive fans away. They didn't draw a million fans in 72, 73, or 74 when they won the World Series. Didn't get to a million any of those years. Now, why? All right. Well, the radio station was run out of UC Berkeley. That's one. All right. Like, he, you know, Charlie Finley, again, like, it was just like almost like wanted to be out of there as soon as he landed.
So you're saying, like, the radio station was too woke?
Wow. Whoa, that took a turn. No, I did not say that, for the record. But broke. Like, that. Whoa.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Whoa.
I just
regurgitating internet catchphrases.
I hope that someday in the near future, producer Brian can get together a transcript of this, so Mark can just finally finish this book proposal about the A's that he, like, very clearly has written in his head. He just can't connect it to his fingers to type it out.
Mark Cook. Let Mark cook.
ADHD is a messed up thing, fellas.
For the people who are listening to the podcast version, not the YouTube version, what makes this even better is that Mark has a very bespoke Philadelphia Athletics jacket on. That looks like, is it an Ebbets Field flannel?
Boy, you are good.
Because that
sure is.
Those babies, you don't just pick those up at the Goodwill for $5.
No, it was not $5. It's very comfortable, though. It's like perfect for today. Chilly out. It's cloudy in New Jersey. A little bit chilly. Perfect thing to be wearing right now, especially as I cook.
That is a sharp jacket, man. That is a sharp jacket. All right. This has been... I'd like to first off apologize to the widow of Sheldon Adelson. He is apparently dead. Has been for a couple years.
Oh, he has?
Yes. Yeah, he was going to buy... I Googled richest people in Vegas, and he popped up, and then I said, Sheldon Adelson like baseball, and then it popped up that he was maybe interested in the Mets, but he's dead. There are other rich people in Vegas. Maybe one of them wants a shiny new toy and to be seen around town. That's my overall point. But yeah, again, apologies to the Adelsons. All right, this has been episode 45 of the Roundtable. We do this every week now, so we will be back next week to talk about baseball, because that is what we do. We will see you then.
Candlestick Park was a f***ing toilet.
I was very wrong.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.